Paul Radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So just think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Wasn't too long ago that we had that interview with Joshua P. Warren, where Chris loses his Skype network connection, and for the last two segments of the show, we had to do it with a landline. He had to be on a landline, and that was adding insult to injury. Okay? It's a peer-to-peer communications product. You can talk from PC to PC, Mac, Windows, whatever, free of charge. If you want to use regular phones, you pay a small fee. They've got hundreds of millions of users. Now, unfortunately, when you're doing things like we do, which is trying to do group conversations, sometimes Skype is flaky. So guess what happened this week? Microsoft is going to pay $8.5 billion to buy Skype. And if you thought Skype was bad before, what do you think, Chris?
Oh, boy. It's not going to be free for much longer.
I think they'll have to make it free. They have to keep it free. The question is not how they're going to monetize it. The question is, will all the people from Skype, all the major developers and executives, leave the company? That's what we have to worry about.
Yeah. Well, it's too big to fail right now. There's quite a number of people now that are switching over to Skype. And it is very convenient. And, boy, it's a lot cheaper calling around the world on Skype than it is the regular AT&T lines.
The problem, though, is that maybe out of a couple hundred million people who use Skype, maybe 8 million pay for the service, use the service they provide for incoming and outgoing telephone calls. This sounds almost like we're doing the technology show, but we're thinking here it's really a paranormal thing because we've had through the years periodic problems with certain guests and Skype. But I never had that problem on my next show.
Richard Sauter springs to mind.
Yeah, but that was because he had his cell phone too close to his computer.
It was a truly paranormal interview.
Oh, I'll tell you about it. As they say, they didn't take him too nicely. Also, our guest last week, Grant Cameron, has gotten some abuse in the forums, as you've noticed.
Yes, I've been rapidly playing catch-up, and, well, what can you say? You know, we do get interesting guests on the show. Guests like Grant have been working in the trenches for years and years, have a lot of information to present. And you have to be patient, and, you know, we can't be diving in and interrupting him every two or three sentences to get clarification on things when he's rattling off all this just fascinating stuff. So let him go with it. And then, you know, had some fun getting clarification on certain points. And I think all in all, it went well. Grant, he's pretty enthusiastic, so it's kind of hard to keep the bridle on him.
Well, the only question I guess we'd have is whether he takes some of his sources a little too seriously.
Yes. Well, that's a whole other issue.
Right. We can go into that. And, of course, we know those people with the birdie names. And I don't want to say anything insulting about bird plus another word, but you wonder if you can believe those people, like a Rick Doty or Robert Collins, who was on the Paracast at one time early on. And he was particularly upset with us.
Well, I have to go revisit that episode.
Oh, boy, it's way back in 2006. We also tried to interview Rick Doty. Now, Rick Doty, as people understand, is a former military guy who went to work, I think, as a police officer, and is supposedly implicated in engaging in UFO-related disinformation. And the one time I talked with him, he was busy insulting Robert Collins, his supposed friend, saying that Collins published this book that he contributed material for, but he was not the co-author and didn't agree with everything that was in the book. So what can you say?
It's a tough game out there.
Speaking of tough games, you were out in the field this past week in New Mexico. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I had a really very, very interesting, arduous 9-day trip that took me all crisscrossing the south end of the geologic San Luis Valley, where it, you know, where you have your border with Colorado and New Mexico, and then the valley kind of comes to a point down around the Taos area and the Rio Grande River Gorge. And it's a part of the valley that is extremely remote. It's very difficult to get around there. And Thomas Pay, one of my field investigator friends there in the valley, graciously took Rosemary Ellen Guiley and myself around to some specific areas that have always intrigued me, but I've never had the, you know, really had a good reason to spend the amount of time it takes to go and explore these areas. And I was really blown away. I mean, it is very magical down there, extremely remote, Indian artifacts and stuff galore. We did almost 60 miles, you know, in the back forest roads and dirt roads there, and we didn't see a single car all day. So it just gives you an idea. You know, we did, close to 300 miles that day. And the whole portion that was done, you know, kind of off-road, we didn't see anybody. And it's just a very spooky area in some sense of the word. I've always wondered what goes on in the middle of the valley there at the south end, and have had quite a number of reports over the years that talk about objects, for instance, descending into or ascending out of this particular region. And it was very interesting to finally get a chance to go there. We did investigate our first case that I'm really not too sure what to make of it, but we're going to have Rosemary on this show. We're going to go ahead and do a full Paracast episode and really get in depth in some of the very interesting ins and outs of these two cases. They're pretty much standalone. I've not had two very interesting couples, super high powered, extremely believable, have no lust for publicity. They don't want their names used, but they were gracious enough to take us into their homes, show us around, give us a blow by blow of a series of in the first case multi-year ongoing events. The second case up in the northern end of the valley is an ongoing two-year case, both of which are just pretty much have about everything you can imagine in them. So I think, you know, without having the time right now to go into a lot of detail, Rosemary and I are going to tape a show with Gene here this coming week, and then that'll be broadcast here a couple of weeks down the road.
Well, this sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. Yeah, it was a great trip. I put about 1,200 miles on, you know, the rent a car and then overland. And we did quite a bit of hiking. We hiked, I don't know, probably 8 miles, 9 miles total. Went to some areas that very few people get to. And it was quite extraordinary. I've got some really good secondary interviews that I'm looking to put in our new Paracast Pro section. And also quite a bit of video and photographs and the like. So it's going to be good.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun with that episode. It's really going to be fascinating. And I look forward after meeting her, and she's a real charming, knowledgeable woman, to hear more about her research and more about the trip that you two took. Now, you also recorded some sessions there.
Yes, I did. I recorded 2 half-hours with my good friend and mentor, David Perkins, while in Santa Fe. And a very interesting quick conversation with my brother, who is one of your unsung heroes in the Maya travel business. He has a top travel service to 5 countries where you find these wonderful reconsolidated, in some cases, newly discovered Mayan ruins. And his insights into this coming period of the 2012, or Y2012K, as I like to call it, time period here in the next year and a half, his insights into this whole thing is fascinating. And that's going to be another extra that we're going to be presenting in the Paracast Pro.
We'll tell our listeners more about that. This week we have an old dear friend of mine who was on one of our first programs, and he's been on occasionally ever since, Tim Beckley, who's sometimes called Mr. UFO. He has a long, and some people say, checkered history in UFO research, but lots of fascinating stories to tell. He brought on one of his editors, who will be joining us, Tim Swartz, who's actually an award-winning journalist. So there you go. Tim Beckley, Tim Swartz. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Yeah.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
When making important financial decisions, you should always know the facts. That's why Midas Resources is willing to pay you to read the facts. Midas Resources, a team of hand-picked financial specialists with decades of financial experience who are ready to provide you with state-of-the-art, up-to-date financial services. Midas Resources offers a host of services and stands behind their products. In fact, if you call and order their free Midas report, Midas Resources will pay you. This detailed report will provide you with financial history on the safest and most profitable areas to invest in. If you read the report, Midas Resources will send you a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. So what are you waiting for? Get the facts and call Midas Resources toll free at 888-292-2709. That's 888-292-2709. And remember, if you read the Midas report, you'll receive a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. This is an urgent message. Urgent if you care about feeding your family. S-510 has passed through Congress and will make the sale of heirloom seeds difficult. Prices of non-GMO seeds are skyrocketing and may be hard to afford in the future, if you can even find them. As the economy continues to decline, this will make the heirloom seeds worth their weight in gold and one of the best barter tools available. When food supplies eventually run out, your solution is to grow your own food and barter tool. Now, for a short time, GetSeeds.net offers 100 packets of heirloom non-GMO vegetable seeds for only $59. Pay with 2 ounces of pure silver or just $59. The best price on the net for high-quality seeds. Our GetSeeds.net seeds are open pollinated vegetable seeds sealed in a Mylar bag for long-term storage. Bulk pricing available. So get seeds while you still can at GetSeeds.net or call toll-free 877-341-4769. That's 877-341-4769. This special announcement is brought to you by Renaissance Charge. Have you ever wondered if you could make your car run on 100% electric power for free? It is now possible. How about a simple device that is both a super efficient motor and a free energy generator at the same time? What if this could also be used to restore useless batteries and save you lots of money? Because our customers asked for it, we have organized a Renaissance Charge Conference workshop on July 29th to July 31st at the beautiful Coeur d'Alene Resort in Idaho. Not only will you see these fascinating energizers, but you will be able to build some alongside genius inventor John Bedini. Participate in this truly historic event featuring our cutting-edge alternative energy, Tesla technology. Register early for the best seats and advanced workshop by visiting rcharge.com. That's r-charge.com for details. Or call 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
So we have Tim and Tim here. We have Tim Beckley, sometimes called Mr. UFO, and we have Tim Swartz, who has written a lot of articles for a lot of people, but does a lot of material for Tim. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're definitely in the Paracast, and I haven't talked to you two on the show for a while. Tim Swartz, you joined us the first year, right?
That's correct, yes. Talked about Richard Schaber.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. We've had other conversations about him since then, and maybe we'll go back into it. We also have questions from our audience. Tim Beckley, for those who haven't heard your long and sordid history in UFO research.
Well, you start out on a good footing there, Gene.
But you know what? I want to ask you, though. I have a question for somebody in the audience who said, how come every time you interview Tim, he sounds as if he has had 20 cups of coffee?
Well, maybe I've only had 10. Actually, today I didn't have a chance to have any of them. I ran out the door and got some ginger ale and came back just in time for the phone to ring.
That works.
I don't think he's ever sounded like he's had 20 cups of coffee. Like you said, maybe 10.
I was thinking 15.
Well, you know, I think what I do is I have so much to say since I have so many years of ufology under my belt and probably a few other things that I've always got more to say. I mean, I never get tired of this. You know, it's something when you got the UFO bug, you can't get rid of it. That's amazing phenomena in itself, Gene, as you know, because you and I have known each other since we were both heading up a teenage UFO groups, which was an early part of ufology going back into the 60s. There must have been a dozen groups that were headed out by teenagers, some of whom are still active in the field and many who have long since passed on to other careers. Lucky for them.
Right. Why did we stick with it?
Well, that's one of the things that I guess we probably have gone through life trying to explain to ourselves. Now, I have a theory that other people have, given me this idea, is that maybe we were meant to do this. Maybe people really do have a career goal or a destiny, and our destiny is to get the word out, whatever the word might be. That's what we're trying to find out after all these years. What really is the word here? And we have shuffled through a lot of theories, a lot of years of sightings and abductions, supposed abductions and close encounters, and it all still just remains a mystery. Maybe it's kind of like Agatha Christie, you know, you want to go back and read the next book because it's never quite all explained. It remains a mystery, and that's what's so fascinating about it. I'm still almost as puzzled by the day that I had my first UFO sighting, which was at the age of 10.
Tell us about the 10-year-old UFO sighting.
Okay, I've had three sightings. Actually four, but the fourth was a drone. I mean, it was an Earth-made object. It wasn't anything extraterrestrial or even interdimensional or time travel or anything like that. But the three main sightings. The first one was in the 1957. I was seated on the front porch of my house out in New Jersey, my parents' home. And there had been a lot of UFO sightings. You know, 1957 was one of the key UFO flap years, mainly in the Southwest, you know, the sightings in Loveland, Texas. I think that was around that time. Anyway, there were a lot of sightings, big flaps going on. And flying saucers, that's what they were called then. I don't think that the term UFO was actually in vogue. Flying saucers, there was always a little something in the newspaper about them. So it was a warm summer night, and we didn't have air conditioning in those days. And we set it out on the seat out on the front stoop. Someone came running up and brought our attention to two lights in the sky. One was directly over an abandoned factory building across the street, Lefkowitz Leather. And the other one hovered directly over the home that I resided in. Now, isn't that kind of interesting, right?
They picked your house of all the places they could have picked.
Well, I don't know whether you could say that. That's a possibility, or maybe it was just a random sighting. I don't, like I say, there were a lot of UFO reports at the time. I mean, you could read more into it, but I'm not telling you should. It's an idea here. Obviously these things rotated in the sky for about maybe 15 minutes. The one over the factory building moved over to the one over the house, and the one over the house moved over to the factory building. Another one across the street, it looked like someone had pulled the light switch, and it just disappeared. The other one stood up there for a while. Finally, we went into the house after it cooled off. And the next day or the following day after that, there was a little item in the newspaper that others had had seen this thing in the sky, these objects in the sky. But the authorities were saying that there was nothing more unusual about it, that it was weather balloons. Well, I knew at the even at the age of 10, Gene, that this was something that seemed to be under intelligent control. And I didn't see any landing gear, no Martians waved at me, Orthon did not make a contact or anything like that.
Now, but I want to ask you a very important question here, which is because obviously when somebody sees something as a child, you're 10 years old. And now you're a few decades past that.
Ah, jeez, yes.
And you've told the story 1,000 times.
Did you set it down?
Yes.
Well, it's what happened. It's not a dramatic sighting, but this is what I recall. And you're right. I mean, your memory can play tricks on you, considering even the abduction phenomenon, hypnosis, and all this thing. We can make ourselves. But I've told the story so many times that it hasn't changed. So I still remember. I remember it. I remember it. So that was sighting number one. I wrote a letter to the newspaper. I think it was the Home News at the time, and I start getting calls from people who had other sightings. And I was taking out books out of the library, like Edward Ruppelt's report on UFOs and Major Donald Kehoe's Flying Saucers Confidential. I think that was the book cover edition of one of his early titles there, you know. And the first UFO magazine I bought, it was the first one published. It was called Mysteries of Space or something like that, 1956, 1957, whatever. I consumed anything that I could find on the subject. Why the pull of this? Again, I guess it goes back to that original sighting, but there was other paranormal things that had happened in the house. There was lights going on and off and doors opening and closing. Not anything related to the UFOs. At least they didn't realize it at that time. Now I think there could be a possible connection. So that was the first sighting. I also had an experience in Warminster, England, back in the early 1980s. I was invited over to England by my friend, the late Earl of Clancarty, Brinsley Laporte Trench, to speak to the unofficial UFO group that was part of the House of Lords that Brinsley had started. You know,
now, he's another story here, because he wrote books about ancient astronauts.
Yes, he did the first one, The Sky People.
Not the first one, because Desmond Leslie wrote the opening section of Flying Saucers Have Landed. So you have to consider here that Flying Saucers Have Landed by Desmond Leslie, also someone from Great Britain, was the opening part of the book that George Adamski was famous for, because it was all about his contact. But we forget the larger portion of the book, or the most interesting part of the book, was this early information that maybe E.T. had visited us in ancient times.
Right.
And he was a pioneer.
Trench was also the first, or maybe second, editor of the British Flying Saucer Review.
All right. Now, we'll talk about that in a moment. We've got more to talk about. We have Tim Beckley, sometimes called Mr. UFO, and we have Tim Swartz. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, neighbors. Meetings are an essential part of any business. You know, making presentations to clients, collaborating with your colleagues. Well, make them as simple as possible to run and organize. Use GoToMeeting by Citrix, the easiest, most reliable online meeting service. With GoToMeeting, you can schedule an online meeting in seconds. Attendees can join with just a click from anywhere. Meeting materials are viewed on everyone's screen, making collaboration seamless. GoToMeeting is so easy to use for you and everyone joining your meeting. Plus, with GoToMeeting, hold as many meetings as you can for one flat rate. You have phone conferencing and voice over IP are included. You know, my listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, a month of unlimited online meetings free. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code PODCAST.
Reality check. There are many so-called health products coming out that are here today but will be gone tomorrow. They're fads, they're hype, and a lot of gimmick. Life Change Tea is no fad. We've been around for years and we've been slowly growing, and our products have attracted loyal customers. Why? Because our products work. Cleansing your body, losing weight, more energy, and better overall health. And you might ask, Says who? Our customers say. A company shows its colors with how many people reorder the product. So don't be afraid. We're the real deal. Log on to GetTheTea.com and read all the testimonies. In fact, log on and order at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or call us at 928-308-0408. There's no call centers, just a friendly operator. 928-308-0408. Once again, 928-308-0408.
The U.S. economy is at a tipping point. 40 cents of every dollar the government spends is borrowed. The president of the Federal Reserve in Dallas was recently quoted saying, "This path will lead to insolvency, resulting in the collapse of our government and our economy. Our country can't function like this, and neither can your household. That's why you need to prepare, and priority one is your food supply. Fortunately, it's easy and affordable with the help of Ready Reserve Foods. Ready Reserve Foods has been a premier supplier of long-term storable foods for 37 years. Their unique process assures the highest quality long-term food storage available with a 25-year shelf life. A full year supply of quality food for two people costs a fraction of what you pay at the grocery store. For a free full-color catalog, call 800-453-2202. That's 800-453-2202. Or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Ready Reserve Foods, making preparedness simple since 1972.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic. And as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist lecturer Stanton Friedman. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We return. We have Tim Beckley, Tim Swartz. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Remembering the long history of Tim Beckley in the UFO field, which becomes, in effect, a history of UFO research. So we talked about some of the people that he met early on. Of course, the late Brinsley LePore Trench, who wrote the book The Sky People. And you were about to say something else before we had a break.
Well, yes, Trench was also the editor of the original editor of the second one. There might have been one before him that lasted a few months, of the very highly respected Flying Saucer Review, the British publication. But the interesting thing is that the original Flying Saucer Review was not published in England. It was published in Brooklyn, probably right around the corner from you, Gene. The first issue of that, as far as I could tell, would have been maybe 1952, 1953, a fellow by the name of Elliot Rockmore. And, of course, now the British Flying Saucer Review was a little bit more polished. It was on glossy paper, but remember, we're talking about the 1950s when printing was rather crude, I mean, compared to what it is today. Elliot Rockmore's publication, which I think was only about eight or nine pages. I did have a copy of it once, but it was mainly consisted of all the sightings that were going on around that time. And he was a member of a group, I guess, that he had splintered off from called the Civilian Saucer Intelligence, and they put out a Civilian Saucer Investigative Quarterly.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Civilian Saucer Intelligence, ladies and gentlemen, CSI of New York.
That's right.
Just like we have a CSI in New York now, they investigate crime. Well, in the 1950s, we had CSI in New York. That was a pretty respectable organization, though, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I was never a member. I think I came along probably just at the end of their reign. You can find some stuff on the internet about some of these early groups, and there's one site that I find absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it's just great. It's called UFOPOP.org. This has magazine covers going back to 1912. There are some, you know, this has been entirely missed. If you look at some of these covers, and you can blow them up on your screen, the first UFO photographs, if you want to call them that, covers were on a magazine called Modern Electronics, or Modern Electrics, actually. Issue number 9, December 1911, shows, I don't know what kind of device this is, but it looks like a UFO complete with portholes. It must have had something to do with electronics, but it doesn't really explain it on the cover, and we don't have anything else to go by. But there are some of these early magazines that show flying saucers. They can't be anything else. So this whole idea of a saucer-shaped device has been in the consciousness of people for many, many years, long before the Kenneth Arnold's sighting, you know, in 1947. But
doesn't that kind of put the lie to the contention that flying saucers represented modern culture? I mean, if you can find stories about them going back to the early part of the 20th century. Wow.
Yes. Well, yes. Well, we know that the phenomenon itself obviously goes way back before that. You've got the UFO flap of the 1897 that were mainly, they weren't so much saucer-shaped devices. I think most of those were aerial devices. Some of them were cigar-shaped. There was a big flap in Wales, in England, back around 1900. There are actually even some photographs. There's a book that we did recently called Disclosure, and it has some of the photographs in this era. They're either clouds or the cigar-shaped craft. You know, the early crafts of that were photographed by Adamski, and most people think that they're serious ufologists, think that they are obvious hoaxes. But, you know, interestingly enough, there was a book published around 1885 or 1887 called Dweller on Two Planets. It was one of the first books that was actually channeled. It had some illustrations.
Aaron, would you just slow down here? One of the first books that was what?
Channeled.
Okay, explain to our listeners. That's where someone gets a communication or hears or feels.
Yeah, okay. Well, now, as I remember the story, and this is a very popular book. It's gone through many publishers and many different editions. As I recall, the story is about a young man, maybe a 17- or 18-year-old teenager, who was working on a ranch, seems to be around Mount Shasta or somewhere in California. While he was out checking on the cattle, he had an experience where he had seen something strange in the sky. He went into trance, I think, right while he was on his horse there at one time, and started receiving messages from different beings. I don't know whether he actually claimed that they were from outer space. It seems to me they might have been Tibetan, but it's many years since I've actually read the book. But there were some fascinating drawings that he did in the book of aerial objects, some of them actually submerging into bodies of water, into the ocean and so forth. They look identical to the craft that were photographed, later supposedly photographed, in the early 1950s by Professor, and I use that in quotes, George Adamski in California.
Okay, can we assume then that maybe Adamski was aware of this?
Yes. Well, that's one of the possibilities, that he was aware of it, or it is a possibility also that Adamski took some photographs. In fact, I do believe this before his career started. Of course, now he was interested in all of this Tibetan philosophy and the New Age stuff back as far as the 1930s, 1935. We recently reprinted his science fiction work that he wrote around 1947, prior to his contact with the Orthon and the Space Brotherhood, in which he talks about being taken to other planets. This was a science fiction book. People say, well, he just rewrote this book and made it the book that he co-authored with Desmond Leslie. It's not the same. I mean, I haven't read every page of Pioneers in Space because it's 400 pages, and Adamski was not the world's greatest writer. In fact, all of his books outside of maybe Pioneers of Space were ghostwritten. But we found that newspaper clipping from
Let me just ask you a question before we go on. Okay.
Yes.
All the books were ghostwritten, you say. Do you know who wrote the books?
Oh, yes.
One person or a man?
Yes. Charlotte Lobb wrote one. Ghost wrote one. And Clara John. My associate for many years, it was a gentleman by the name of Harold Salton. In fact, we shared many a good time together. He was headquartered down in Washington, D.C. And whenever any of the contactees or the UFO researchers, for that fact, came through town, because they lectured wildly, you know, people think, oh, they made a lot of money. Well, they didn't make money. You know, Dan Fry would get on a Greyhound and Albuquerque somewhere and head, you know, east, and after 6 months he'd hit maybe, you know, 25 different towns or something, stayed for free at people's homes, charged 50 cents in those days for a lecture, you know, and then would return to Albuquerque after telling the story all over the country to people who would fill up small halls of 100, 200, 300 people. Anyway, Clara John and Harold ran a little listening post. It was a very exciting newsletter that ran about 6 or 8 pages. It was put out whenever there was important news. And for a long time, Washington, D.C. was kind of the hub of the UFO field. I mean, there was so much activity going on around there as far as sightings. Many of them actually made by government, you know, workers, not necessarily higher ups, but government workers. In fact, I just visited recently out in Tucson with Paul Dickey. Well, now, I had met Mr. Paul Dickey back in the 1960s because he had had many, many sightings over the Washington, D.C. area, and not just witnessed by himself, but by others as well. In fact, one of the sightings that was made from a government building included, I think, about 7 witnesses besides them, made the front page of the Washington Post. Most people have forgotten about it, but that's part of the, you know, the Washington, D.C. UFO story. So the little listening post was the place that people stopped. And Harold, my friend Harold, got to know Adamski and Wayne Aho and all these people on a personal basis.
All the various people who were contactees, part of the contactee movement of the 50s
there were other 60s.
Tim, got to do the break. We have Tim Beckley, Mr. UFO, Tim Swartz. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Spring and a new growing season are here. Plan a healthy garden easy and fast with Organicaseed.com. Easy because Organicaseed.com offers one of the largest online selections of organic, heirloom, non-hybrid, and untreated seeds, as well as tobacco and cotton seeds at low prices. Go to Organicaseed.com, spelled O-R-G-A-N-I-C-A-Seed.com. Organicaseed.com. Remember, Organicaseed is healthy seed.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Never buy home canning jar lids again.
No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher-safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids. The original since 1976.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You've entered another dimension. You've entered the Paracast.
We return with Tim Beckley, Tim Swartz on the Paracast with Gene and Chris, exploring Tim's long and sometimes rather shaky history as a UFO researcher. Going back to the early years, we're talking about this Washington, D.C. movement, the Little Listening Post, some of these early contactees, and all that. I think the question that a lot of people ask, you've published books by so many people of different persuasions. But what does Tim Beckley believe?
Well, like everybody else in the field, I started out believing that flying saucers were from outer space, that we were being visited. I was never a big believer in the contactees. I enjoyed their stories. I stayed up late at night listening to Long John Neville with guests like George Van Tassel, who built a time machine, a rejuvenation machine, the Integratron, in the desert in the town of Landers. It still stands there to this day, Gene. He had on Howard Menger. Howard was a great guy. In fact, I knew him personally. In the early days when he first started telling his stories, he looked like a soap opera star, you know, very chiseled face and handsome. And he was quite a dashing figure.
Let me ask you a question parenthetically. When Howard Menger went on Long John Neville's TV show, very short-lived TV show, maybe it lasted a season. You know, Long John was the kind of person who worked great on radio. And I grok this. I understand it because I'm the kind of person who I think works best on radio. I'd never even tried TV. I've been on TV a few times. And you and I, Tim, we have the face for radio. Okay. So he gets this interview. Okay, I'm letting that sit there. He gets this interview. He does this interview with Menger. Menger kind of begins to recant the case. Well, maybe he was the victim of government disinformation, something like that. Uh-huh. Now, he said the same thing to Jim Moseley and me in the 60s. We had lunch with him, and he was telling me the same story. You know what? Maybe I was just part of some kind of government experiment.
Well,
what do you think?
Yeah, let me tell the story, because, like I said, I knew Howard. In fact, he had retired. If you remember, he was a sign painter, and he lived in High Bridge, New Jersey. Supposedly, these craft were landing in his apple orchard behind his house. Beings, humanoid beings, you know, the Space Brother types, were coming out of the craft and walking around at night, and Howard was seen going into the field and perhaps having a conversation with these beings. It could never actually be substantiated to a large degree. It was, whether you were a believer or one of the faithful, or there were people that were skeptical. But, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to independent people, some people who did not even know Menger, who had had sightings on the property. They had seen craft land. They had followed these beings into the thickets and the trees and the wooded areas and all. They had seen the craft. So there was something going on there for a long time. Now, I think it got to the point in Howard's life where he was being pestered, you know, especially back in those days. Well, people contact you on the internet now, but most people don't give out their phone number, and I certainly, for one, have never given out my address, because I've had threats on my life, not from the Men in Black, but from deranged fans. I mean, some of these people, obviously, who follow the subject are not fully arranged upstairs. But anyway, there did seem to be something strange going on at Howard's. So I think he got to the point where he was being pestered so much that he couldn't go on with his daily life. Also, he had children and a wife and so forth, and it's maybe a little bit embarrassing to go to high school, right? And everybody knows that your father is a UFO contactee. That's kind of, out there, right? So he did back off for a while. But then years later, he made a return to the field. He didn't make a big splash. Most of the magazines, I just didn't cover his return. But he did show up at a couple of conferences that we gave. You know, we organized fairly big events out there in Phoenix. You attended a couple of them. They drew huge crowds of 500 or 600, which for a UFO weekend is certainly a very large crowd. And he went back to telling the original story.
So
and,
what was his excuse? What was his reason to recant?
He never really said, but he did have some experiences, he claims, with the Men in Black. He was visited a couple of times by the FBI, so I don't think he ever really explained it, but then he didn't really have to. I don't think he ever said everything that he did was something that was set up by the government. Howard liked to talk. He liked to tell a great yarn, no doubt about that. In fact, I wrote a very lengthy 40-page article for UFO Magazine. They wanted me to write it. I spent a lot of time researching it. They never published it because they wanted to publish 40 pages on Emma Wood instead. So the article is out there.
We don't want to talk about Emma Wood, okay.
No, I certainly don't, and it's a big waste of time anyway. But I think Howard had something going for them, for him, as well as some of these other early experiencers, save perhaps the Mystic Barber. I don't ever believe any of this.
Oh, boy, wait a minute here. Now, the Mystic Barber, I met him a couple of times.
Andy Sinatra.
Claiming to be some kind of distant cousin to the other Sinatra.
That's correct, and he was a tonsorial artist, a barber, of course. And
see, nowadays, it's a hairstylist. In those days, you were just a barber. You get $2 for a haircut, you're a barber. Now, you can get $10 for a haircut if you're a barber, but if you say, I'm a hairstylist, it's $500.
And I'm sure Andy Sinatra would have cut your hair for a buck in those days and told you the story. Well, now, he was the first person with the antenna on his head, if you remember correctly. He used to walk around with some sort of tinfoil because he claimed it blocked out the negative rays of the bad space people, or maybe it attracted the good rays of the good space people. But he was a character, and he always showed up at Jim Moseley's meetings. And, you know, you could say, well, the guy was totally off the wall, but he was kind of humorous, and there would not be a UFO meeting if Andy didn't show up. There were a couple of characters. There was also Alex McNeil. Do you remember Alex?
Yes, I do. Tell our listeners who Alex McNeil was.
Well, Alex McNeil was 6'8". He was certainly the world's tallest contactee, and perhaps the tallest tale-teller of any of the contactees. He lived in Flushing, New York, and he claimed that he was walking, I think, through the city dump one day or something, looking for tires. And he had an experience where he saw a UFO land and little beings came out of the ship. And he talked about that experience. I think maybe he had some telepathic activity going on with them after that. But he talked about that experience at every opportunity. Well, people would say, Alex was telling a tall tale. But I think he believed his story. Now, he disappeared from the New York UFO scene because there isn't much of a New York UFO scene for many, many years. But he actually called me on the phone about a year ago. He's living down in North Carolina.
He's still around. How old the guy was he?
He's still around, and he's probably grown another 2 inches. Well, I don't know. I would say he's got to be certainly in his 70s.
Wow, all these people. Now, these were characters. You didn't necessarily have to take anything these people said seriously.
Okay. See, now this is where people confuse me, okay? People say, well, you publish these books by so-and-so, and you speak highly of so-and-so, and their stories, I don't believe them. Well, you have UFOs as craft, the phenomena of the sightings and the landings and the contacts, and then you have UFOs as a pop culture, as part of the culture of Americana, but not only here in the United States, because we know this goes on and has gone on for decades all over the world. In fact, our publication, The Conspiracy Journal, is now being put out in Romania. It is the first paranormal UFO publication put out in Romania and has a bigger circulation over there than our American edition does, I believe, at this point.
And don't say it was published in Transylvania, please.
No, it's not. In fact, we haven't even done an article on Dracula yet, although maybe we will.
Next week.
Perhaps.
Okay. All right. So, obviously, there's a lot of conspiracies to explore. In fact, just a few weeks ago, we had former Governor Jesse Ventura on the show, and we had a full three-hour episode. I think it was one of the best he's done. I've heard him on other shows, but he didn't seem to enjoy it as much as he enjoyed the Paracast, telling us about the Kennedy assassination, about 9/11. All the crazy conspiracies. And you kind of wear many hats here, Tim. You cover the conspiracies, you cover the paranormal, you cover the UFOs. But is there a little glint in your eyes saying, you know, folks, it's interesting, it's a good story, but I don't believe all this stuff?
Oh, well, I think Augie Roberts said, he had a phrase here, he said, I believe in everything and nothing. And I believe, you know, you can't find out what's going on unless you investigate these things. I mean, so that's the point. Also, what you're interested in, I may not be interested in. So when we put out a book or publish an article, it may be something that doesn't particularly even interest me. I mean, my interest in conspiracies lies more in the paranormal and in the UFO stuff, not so much in 9/11 or 2012 or any of this other
You were going to say another word, but we can't allow you to say it on commercial radio. Listen, we have Tim Beckley. He is also called Mr. UFO, and a little bit later he'll tell you how you can subscribe to his newsletter. Get all his mailings. Of course, there's news information, and of course, he's selling books. Tim Schwartz is here, too. He'll talk more in our next hour. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi. This is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.